My Mac Podcast number 193, sponsored by Otherworld Computing. Check them out at MacSales.com.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And it's the doldrums of summer, which means there's not a whole lot of Mac news, but we're going to forge ahead with our weekly podcast. My name is Tim Robertson. I'm the publisher of MyMac.com. I'm joined by my two regular co-hosts this week, Guy Searle. Hello, Guy Searle.
Hello, Tim.
And David Cohen. Hello, David.
Good evening, all.
So there's not a lot going on as far as news per se, but, you know, we have a whole lot of people out there listening, and we're all using programs and these computers, so there's got to be stuff to talk about, right?
Well, we you would hope so.
Yeah, definitely. What we're going to do is we're going to quickly jump over to a Cool Mac Picks with Sam Levin, and then we're going to listen to an audio file that John Nimorovsky sent in with an interview he did with Jim Dicker. Jim was a contributor during the Macworld Expo for us. He did a lot of video work. And, man, he was really good with the video work, too. Did you guys see some of the video that he recorded?
Oh, yeah, saw it all. Nice guys, too.
Very nice guy. I really like Jim. And so I'm looking forward to hearing what he and Nemo had to talk about. But let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Sam Levin. And we're here with Sam Levin with Cool Mac Picks. Hello, Sam Levin with Cool Mac Picks.
Hello there, Tim.
So you're the cool miser. Miser? Is that miser?
Cool miser?
Cool, you're the cool miser of all things Mac and iPhone and iPod.
Anything that connects to a Mac.
That's right.
It could even be PCs. It could even be, you know, things that are, you know, that are platform agnostic, USB drives.
Cool. Well, what do you got for us this week?
All right. Well, our friends at Griffin have come up with a really cool solution for iPhone, iPods called the Power Dock. So I don't know about you guys, but I have multiple iPods and iPhones now. And what happens if you want to connect them at the same time? And that becomes a problem because you have to sync one, unplug it, sync the other iPod or iPhone. Well, Power Dock is a multi-dock solution for charging and syncing your iPod or iPhone. And it's pretty cool. And I've been doing this for actually many years now. I've been actually plugging two iPods into one Mac. And I asked people years ago, hey, why isn't there a solution? Well, Griffin's come out with it. It's very, very simple. It works. It's a stand that's a dock. And you can plug your iPhone, two iPhones or two iPods, an iPod, an iPhone into this dock, and you can sync to your Mac or PC.
So I take it it comes with those little adapters that you can put in there so it will fit. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it has that. It's pretty cool. This is a two-dock solution. They've announced the four-dock solution, which I don't know when it's coming. But
that could be handy if there's a family with, you know, two people have an iPhone and another one has an iPod. And yeah, I could see that. That's groovy.
No, it's pretty cool. And it's $49.99. It's not that expensive for a dock, but it's useful. You know, the only thing that I'd like to see is possibly including speakers so that it's a complete solution, or mini USB in the bottom of it to plug your other devices.
Does it have audio out in it or no?
Oh, God. Let's see here. That's a good question. I don't think it does.
Because that would be interesting to me if it had audio out so I could use it to charge the iPods, but I could also run it, you know, speakers off of that.
Yeah, no. I don't think it has audio. If it did, it would cost more.
Is there two versions of this, Sam? Because the one I'm looking at here is just charging only. It doesn't sync.
Let's see here. Hold on. Just a second. It charges. Yes, there is. There's a charge. This one only charges. Mine only will charge the dock. You are absolutely right. Only for charging.
But that's still pretty useful.
It is, but still, I want the syncing as well.
Yeah.
And let's see, I'm on the buy, 2-dock charging, 4-dock. Nope. I guess it's 2 or 4-dock. There's not a syncing. It's only a 2-dock or 4-dock version for charging. And the coming soon says up here, coming soon for 4-dock. So you can't do the sync at the same time, but you could charge it at the same time. And it's brushed aluminum. I think it's pretty cool. I like it.
I wonder why it doesn't sync, though. That's odd.
Well, I don't know, but you can do multiple syncing on one Mac with two iPods. I've done it many times.
Yeah,
but that's probably two different cords running to the USB, and this is probably just one.
Yeah, then they'd have to sort the USB switching. But I'll tell you that who this would be really useful for, all those people who upgrade to iPhone 3G and have kept the old one, iPhone version 1, because obviously with the iPhones, that's all you're ever doing is charging them every day because the batteries run flat quick.
I know. And here's the other interesting thing. I've been plugging the iPhone 3G into other docks, older docks, and now some of those say this will not support this iPhone. It won't even charge it.
Really? The new one?
Right. And it never, the old iPhone works fine with all the other docks.
You know, that's been one of my concerns because, and I've mentioned it many, many times, that I use the Drive Plus Play 2 in the Honda, and I use the original Drive Plus Play in the minivan now, and they both work just fine with my first-generation iPhone, but my concern is if I buy the new 3G iPhone, will it work in that? And I haven't heard any reports one way or another. So, I mean, that's just yet another reason that I'm going to hold off getting an iPhone 3G. You know, and I don't really need an iPhone 3G. I'm perfectly happy with my first generation iPhone. But speaking of iPhone, you told us last week, Sam, that you're going to be doing a Cool Mac pick every week with an app. Do you got one for us this week?
An app. Oh, God, man. I've got several, actually. But let's, you know what? We'll talk about the company called PosiMotion. And if you're not familiar with these guys, they make a whole line of different iPhone application, G-Spot, G-Park, G-Fi, G-Life, and some games as well. And some of their – I'm not going to talk about the games, but I want to talk about the utilities. And one of the utilities is called A-Level, and it's really, really cool. And it's basically a level. It looks like a normal level that you'd use on your iPhone.
Like an audio level or like
measuring level? No, measuring level, just like a normal level. And I know it sounds crazy, but I think it's cool. I know it's the craziest thing. It shows you degrees or radians, and you just move your iPhone around, and it's a level. And it's red. It lights up. I think it's pretty cool.
I'd be curious to know how accurate it is.
You know,
because there is no flat surface on the iPhone. I mean, you can't really lay it flat.
Well, when I have it in my case, it does lie flat. So if I have it, you know, I have it in a spec pixel skin case right now, and it does lie flat. So I think it works pretty well. I don't know. So that's one of the cool things. They're very, very inexpensive. Yeah, cowbell for that. They also have something called G-Park. Now, I haven't really messed around with G-Park, so it's kind of like it links up with your GPS for when you're parking, and I have not used it. I just messed around with it. It looks pretty fun, little tool. But these guys have they're in the top 10 downloads. That's what they say at the App Store right now.
Awesome.
So just go to PosiMotion, P-O-S-I. motion.com, and you can check out all of their different products. They have a number of games, solitaire, pool, backgammon. For some reason, they put level in the games area. So I guess it's fun to play with the level as if it's a game. Maybe a three-year-old would think that. But
I wonder if – yeah, they could. I wonder if they're the ones who made the solitaire game that I downloaded for $1.99.
It's called Solitaire Top 3.
No, mine's just Solitaire.
Right.
By mobility wear.
Right. Well, there's several solitaire games. I haven't messed around with their solitaire game. I'm kind of looking forward to playing their pool game. They've got a really neat billiard game called Pool, and you could play against the iPhone, or you can play against another person. What's missing with a lot of these apps or games or utilities is multiplayer interactive iPhone to iPhone. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. I mean, so, the iPhone has built-in Edge, and you know, a lot of these games you could probably even rely on Wi-Fi and play it over the internet. That'd be great.
That's what I want to see, is for them to incorporate that. And then lastly, we might as well lead into the iPhone developer camp. August 1, there's a really cool conference. I call it an unconference here in San Francisco called iPhone Developer Camp. And what we're going to do is we're going to broadcast from there. It's from the Adobe building in San Francisco. Actually, it used to be Macromedia before Adobe bought it, but that's Adobe now. And it's where top iPhone developers around the world are going to congregate. We're talking about 550 of them. And wow. They're going to spend a weekend coding, getting together, sharing notes and ideas about how to build better iPhone applications. And they did it last year. It was a huge success. This year is even bigger. They capped it. It's already closed. And this is a free event. If you go to iPhoneDevCamp.org, you'll see all the different sponsors that are contributing to the event. I'll podcast and I'll call in and I'll do some live broadcast from iPhone Developer Camp. I think we're going to see a lot of really cool developers. In next week, I'll talk about some of the other stuff that's going on, some of the other applications from people like Magnetism, who make file magnets so that you can transfer files from your iPhone to your Mac. Really useful, really useful. And they make a slew of other cool apps as well. So I'll get into that, and we'll do some giveaways on apps as well if we can. Right now, there's not a way to specifically give one application away. But next week, we're going to give away some spec iPhone cases, both 3G and original iPhone, or classic, or whatever we call the iPhone, the original one. So stay tuned for that. We're going to give away like 4 or 5 spec cases.
Cool. Well, we'll look forward to talking to you next week, and looking forward to finding out what's going to happen with this iPhone Dev Camp. It sounds kind of interesting, and you know, shortly thereafter, maybe we'll have our own kind of announcement that we can make, Sam.
Yeah, we'll do that. And lastly, just go check out iPhone Microsites. Go to iPhoneMicrosites.com. Check out this site. I think you'll be intrigued. I don't need to say much more than that. Once you go to it, you'll understand what it is. Very, very cool. That company will be at iPhone Dev Camp. They are a sponsor, and they have a very unique web development proposition for anyone that is marketing and selling through the iPhone. That's it.
Thanks for joining us this week, Sam.
You got it.
Back during the Macworld Expo in January of 2008, my Mac had the services of a terrific video helper named Jim Dicker, who was new to our publication at that time, and we're delighted to have him back on the show. Glad to have you with us, Jim.
Thanks.
We've been talking recently about the changes in technology, and I understand you're very comfortable with your iPhone. What is your general sense of where Apple is going as far as touchscreen technology and mobile computing as a new platform? Because we know Lee has been very, very keen on that. What's your sense from your own use and your ear to the wind?
I think the iPhone or whatever comes after it will be the center of all computing.
Do you think it makes any difference whether it's Mac or Windows or Parallels or VMware or Vista? What does it have to do with the platforms as we know them now?
I think probably not as much in the future, because I think everything's going to be internet-based and they'll all be internet programs as well.
Have you used some of the download programs from the App Store, as it's called, that you can suck right into your iPhone?
Right now I'm experimenting with both SmugMug and with Cloudy.
Can you spell those for us, please?
Cloudy is C-L-O-W-D-Y. SmugMug is S-M-U-G-M-U-G. And I think it's called Smugshot, actually. So it would be S-M-U-G-S-H-O-T on the App Store.
And what are those?
Cloudy is a program in beta, which is, they call it a photo blog. And it simply allows you to upload a photo from your iPhone that you've taken with the iPhone camera, which is going to be a little different than the Smugshot. And then you're allowed to put a tag, not a tag, but a caption on it. And that's it. That's all you get. And it's been on and off for me this weekend when I've been experimenting with it, but it's absolutely and truly free.
Well, what does it do once it's up there? Is it like Flickr that you can look at it and have other people point to it?
Right now, it's just up there, and you have to give someone your URL, and you can see it. Now, it also, you can, from your iPhone, you can look at other people's photos based on nearness, or you can select all Cloudy photos, and then you'd be scrolling for hours. They come from Vietnam. I've seen ones from Vietnam and Japan and Thailand, as well as right around the corner. Both of these programs also very much encourage you to geotag your photo so that people can look on Google Map and see exactly where it is.
So is this a perfect example of what we're talking about, using a mobile computing platform to create the photo, to upload the photo to some website somewhere, wherever it happens to be, and then to use the GPS or tagging features that the iPhone has for auto location to then be able to pinpoint more or less where it actually had taken place?
Yeah, it is, but it's not really what I was talking about. I mean, I just think eventually you'll take your iPhone and that will be your nerve center, and you'll just plug it in to a big keyboard if you want to work on that keyboard, a huge monitor, because everything will be on the web. And the iPhone will just have the stuff that is solely specific to you, your passwords, whatever kind of absolutely personal information you need. Obviously, it'll have your address book but your calendar will be on the web. Actually, your address book will be on the web. So it'll really just be a series of passwords and gateways that allow you to get to your information that is somehow securely held up on the web.
Do you think it matters how much or how little physical storage space in gigabytes is on the portable device, in this case 8, 16, 32, what have you, as far as the gigabyte capacity of the new and the pending iPhones?
For now, it matters a little, but in the future, when the bandwidth gets large enough, it just won't matter. You'll go up to the internet and get your song that you've already paid for that happens to be in your cloud, and that'll be it.
Do you foresee any pitfalls or problems that are going to happen as far as capacity or speed or security with the cloud computing, where you don't actually have the physical data on something that you're carrying around or that's back in your basement someplace?
I'm not so sure we're secure right now. But, I mean, there are always going to be good guys and bad guys, and it's like anything, who's ahead at the moment.
Tell us more about the App Store. What is the user experience like?
It's very simple. You just go there. You can go by category, and they list a whole bunch of categories for you, whether it's social networking or photography or video or families. I mean, they have I don't know if it's hundreds, but many, many categories. You can search it that way. You can browse by the 25 top picks or whatever. You go up there. It gives you a brief description. You decide whether you want to pay for it. I think $4.99 is the biggest thing that I've seen. Do you want me to get back to the Mugshot thing for a second? Because it says it's a free app, but it really isn't.
Why is that?
Because the app is, in fact, free. But if you want it to be useful at all, you have to join SmugMug, which is, it looks to me, I haven't looked at it too much, is an incredibly sophisticated photo storage and dissemination site. But the standard price for that is $39.95 a year.
Which has nothing to do with the application itself. That's the organization.
That's the organization, but you can't use the application without paying the $39.95 a year, because your storage capacity up on the web will disappear. So You have this app, you'll have no place to load it to.
So it's a hybrid that's using the wireless and the cloud technology to interact with something that has maybe a physical presence, maybe not, but it's something that needs to be anchored somewhere.
Yeah, it's a great marketing tool because people with iPhones want to have this capacity, and it introduces them to something that's very sophisticated that, for example, for me, I didn't even know about.
Let's talk a bit more about the touch itself. What is it like to be touching a little piece of plastic or glass or whatever that screen is to actually conduct your business?
It's a little bit. Imagine you've sometimes seen a director in a movie or actually the personification or the characterization of a director that holds up his hand and makes a square with his two fingers and looks around framing things. That's kind of what the touch technology is. It's like there's an infinite amount of information there, whether it's your address book or whether you open and enlarge or make smaller a web page and you move it around with your finger. So you're kind of seeing a limited view. And if you don't know where you are, sometimes it's very frustrating to see. But the touch technology, it's just very simple. You don't need anything else.
If tomorrow I said no more desktop computer, no more laptop computer, everything had to live on a sophisticated touch device that had all the applications and all the capability and all the access to the cloud software universe, would you be upset if you could somehow port your existing stuff up and then starting the day after tomorrow, you'd have to use only the touch technology?
I'd be very upset.
Why is that?
It's just too small. It's got that problem of you can't see everything. I just think what I want is that thing to plug into a regular keyboard when I need it, a big 30-inch monitor when I need it, so that the way it interfaces and outputs and does all that, you still have access to all of this stuff. It's just that you don't have a hard drive anymore.
What about iTunes? At the moment, iTunes is the gateway between the iPod Touch and the iPhone to the computer, which then allows you to do other things with your data in syncing and vice versa. What about that iTunes? Is it a capable gateway, or is it hamstrung, or does it in need of some sort of major kick in the pants?
iTunes is very close to being that. The only thing it's really missing, as far as I can see, is the storage. You have your own hard drive with your own library and tunes on it. But if that were up on the internet, it would be completely that. You'd access it from anywhere. You wouldn't have to have your own iPod with you. You know, you could just, through some other device, go up to your iTunes library and play it on the computer you had there.
Are you a .Mac subscriber, now a MobileMe subscriber?
I appear to be both, because I have both email addresses, and I'm not sure exactly what I'm supposed to do with that, but I am.
And how have you handled the somewhat bumpy road during the first week of the transition?
I got no bumps, so...
Yours worked fine?
All of a sudden, a MobileMe address showed up inside my mail account, but other than that, I've had no problems.
So you have no headaches, none of the agonies that other people have had?
I've had less agony since it went MobileMe than I had with .Mac, because the what used to be the iDisk just works much better now.
Let's just quickly fast forward to Macworld Expo 2009, January, Moscone Center. What would it take to get you back there to be our fantastic video crew for the expo next year?
Funding.
Okay, so if you're out there listening and you like the videos that you've seen and heard from MyMac and MyMac.com and our coverage of the Macworld Expo, Jim Dicker is the man behind that. We thank you very much for being with us on the MyMac team, and we look forward to more relationship with you in 2008, 2009, and beyond.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
And thanks very much, John Nemo and Jim Dicker, for that segment. And we're back with Sam Levin, Guy Searle, and David Cohen, and me, Tim Robertson. So we're going to wrap up the show in a little while, but we've got this whole big segment to fill, guys. So we've got some Mac news. And David Cohen, you just found some interesting App Store news, I take it.
I did, yeah. This is up on Gizmodo. And there was an application from the iPhone App Store called Aurora Faint, which was like a puzzle
game. I talked about it last week. That Donnie Yankelo actually recommended to me. I didn't get it. I tried playing it a couple of times, and I was like, I don't understand what I'm supposed to do, and I just kind of forgot about it and deleted it off the iPhone. But he got really hooked on it.
Well, it's gone. It's been delisted from the App Store, and the reason for that is apparently the...
Nobody else got it? It was too complicated?
No, a bit more than that, really. The programmers, I think everyone seems to be thinking that they were just stupid rather than malicious, but effectively what they were doing is to enable the community feature of the phone to allow you to play against your friends. It was uploading the entire contents of your address book up to their servers.
Is that a problem?
Well, that's a problem? Oh, hold on a minute. I just made a blog post with... Sam Levin's, his entire contact that I actually got. And
in plain text.
I should probably delete that. It wasn't malicious, Sam. I was just stupid.
Yeah. So Apple have now pulled it for that because they believe that that is not in the community's interests. So I mean, if anybody's actually got this game, if you didn't use the community feature, you don't have to worry about it because it only did this if you enabled the community feature to allow you to play with your friends. Just to be on the safe side, if I had this app on my phone, I would have deleted it by now.
Yeah, and that would have been gone.
I suspect what will happen. I don't know what the D-list procedure is, but probably the next time people dock their iPhones, if they've got this app, it's going to say, this has been removed, and we'll probably delete it from your phone for you.
No, I doubt if they would do that.
No?
When it's delisted, I think they just take it out of the App Store. I don't know if Apple has the capacity. Well, I know they have the capacity. I just don't know legally if they can get onto your iPhone and delete something that you've downloaded, whether it's a free application or not. I think some people would have a problem with that. I think I would have a problem with that.
Well, this wasn't a free app, was it?
Yeah, it was a free. They said that it was like a preview of a full game that's going to be coming out, or this is part one, and the next part two would be paid for, something like that. Yeah,
that's a little dodgy.
Yeah, coming next on our next great security breach.
Nice. No, we needed your email. We needed all of your emails just in case you wanted it someplace else in this game.
So, I mean, what it does say, though, I mean, obviously Apple has this this fairly complex developer sign-up procedure, and they talk about vetting the applications before they allow them onto the App Store.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what kind of vetting that Apple is actually doing, though, because so far... I don't know. I'll ask Sam. Sam, how many applications on the iPhone have you had to update so far? For me, it's been like 20.
No, only four or five.
Yeah. In a week and a half.
Yeah.
I think that's good that the developers are
responding so quickly. Attention.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think that it's very. I don't think it speaks highly to Apple's vetting procedures.
Well, I think you guys are speaking too soon. Listen, what's going on is, I'm telling this for a reason, there's a bunch of updates that are not ready yet. They're not ready. Apple is holding back on some of those things because of some other updates that have to occur as far as Apple iPhone particular. I spoke to several developers and they said, we have all of these things ready to go and we have to wait. So I think it's good. Everything is good about it.
I wouldn't say everything is good about it. Has been getting slammed lately.
I'm not talking, I left that out of the, obviously, that is not part of the app conversation. Now that you mentioned that, yes, that has been a problem definitely with me or with people that are .Mac people.
Let's talk about that, because I've mentioned it on the show, but we didn't actually talk to you about it, Sam.
Yep.
I know that you were having major .Mac problems, and my contention with that on your behalf was that this is not like Gmail. This is not a free service. This is something you're paying $100
a year for.
Plus you're using your .Mac account as your business email.
Yep, and so I immediately... I have Gmail, so what I did was I added Gmail to my Apple Mail account so that I could use Gmail for SMTP out, and everything works perfectly. So the problem is outgoing mail. Right now it says it's offline. .Mac is offline. So
it's ridiculous.
So I don't understand. Now, David Poe just did a post this morning, if you read from New York Times, and he said there's been a number of outages, like 20,000. He surmises 20,000 people. I don't know what it is. Walt Mossberg poo-pooed it. Look, they'll get the kinks out. They made probably a error in putting all of this out at the same time or roughly.
Yeah, but Sam, the outages with .Mac happened long before MobileMe was released. This was happening 6 weeks ago.
Yep.
Or I should say 6 weeks before MobileMe came out.
It was
so
a
we're
month
talking
ago.
2 months now that Apple has been having significant problems with their .Mac service.
Right.
So.
Right, I agree.
I don't know what the answer is.
I don't either.
At this point, I would definitely caution anybody who's thinking about using .Mac as their primary email service. I don't think Apple's been showing
good faith
in keeping this system either scaled or simply operational.
Well, you know, we kind of talked about this last week. You know, I basically, you know, and this is just my opinion, is that Apple was really trying to do too many things at one time.
Yep.
That MobileMe probably should have been released maybe as long as a month ago, get the bugs worked out, see how it's working with you know, the first generation iPhone, see how it's working in conjunction with .Mac, get all the bugs worked out, then release all the other things.
One of the big things that we had been talking about a few months ago was SciStar.
Yeah.
And we didn't get to this on last week's show, and this was making all the big news, so I figured we'll talk about it just briefly here. Apple finally is suing the pants off of SciStar. Is anybody surprised?
No.
I'm surprised it took as long as it did.
Yeah, David, why do you think it took Apple so long to file a court document against SciStar? I mean, this was like, two and a half, three months ago that we were talking about this.
I think they were probably very carefully evaluating whether it was worth doing or not. I think they were hoping that maybe the thing would die on its own. You've got to remember that going to court is always a risk because, you know, there's really no such thing as an open and shut case, especially in your legal system where there's so many circuits, you know, you can have judges who don't really understand technology and that sort of thing very well. There's always a risk if they go to court and it actually ends up in court that a judgment might not go in their favor or parts of a judgment might not go in their favor, and that might have massive implications for how they do business in the future. So I would imagine their legal people would probably look at this very, very carefully and decide on the best approach, and I'm sure they're now in a position where they're confident that it won't go to court, that they've brought litigation forward and SciStar aren't in a position to defend it and will just quietly go away, because I suspect that's what they want to do.
I don't think it's going to go away. I think this whole thing kind of revolves around whether or not Apple's EULA, the end user license agreement, is actually legal to try to enforce, because I mean what this revolves around is within the EULA it states that you cannot install OS X on any computer other than a Macintosh created by Apple. So if they go to court over this and SciStar decides to, you know, not roll over and die, and some judge somewhere sides with them and says, no, this EULA is nonsense and you can't get away with this, this opens the door for anyone to make Mac-compatible computers, and the only thing Apple gets out of it is copies of OS X being sold.
You know, I think the issue, though, here really is if a company like SciStar was selling a machine that they're claiming is Mac OS X compatible, and here's how, and they even send you the instructions on how to hack Mac OS X to run on it.
But that's not what they're doing.
I know. Let me finish.
Okay.
And you have to bring your own copy of OS X, or they'll sell you a copy of OS X along with the computer. I think that would be very hard for Apple to defeat in court. But that's not what SciStar is doing. SciStar is hacking the Mac OS X to run on their machines, and they're selling machines with it preloaded.
Yeah.
That's why.
And charging for the installation.
Exactly.
Well.
And I would guarantee you that they are not sending a brand new copy of OS X with each machine.
No. That's not correct, Tim. They are. They're including a box copy.
Oh, are
a
they?
A retail copy of OS X for every machine that you specify that you want to have OS X on. And you pay $155 for through their website.
And this is precisely the point I was trying to make. Apple does not want anyone to have these arguments in a courtroom because it might not go in their favor. And I suspect the reason it's taken so long, their legal team have really had a good look at the at the company and decided that they can't afford to fight this and they'll roll over. And let's face it, you know, unless somebody like Larry Lessig or somebody like that comes in to represent SciStar pro bono, they're not going to be able to actually front up a legal case for this because it's a backroom operation, it's a garage operation.
Well, I heard they're being represented by Alan Shore.
By Alan Shore, they'll probably win then.
They seem to win all the time.
So this is going to lead right into the next news item, Guy. You want to read that one for us?
Ah, yes. OpenTech Incorporated. Is this where you were going?
Yep.
Okay, this is another company that's claiming to sell OS X compatible machines. Now, what they're doing differently from SciStar and where Apple probably can't touch them is that they aren't actually giving you a computer that has OS X installed on it. What they're doing is making the machine, and they've probably gone to the OS X 86 websites and have gotten, you know, downloaded the parts list and all that, and they're making these machines, they're selling them to you, and then including instructions on how to install an OS X onto their machines. So, you know, you can take almost any PC that has the same type of components that Apple includes in their computers and install OS X on it if you're willing to go through all the hassle of doing so.
By the way, Tom at mymac.com has requested that we stop calling it Mac OS X.
Yes.
I'm calling it Mac OS X.
OS X. So.
Okay. I made a conscious effort earlier. It is Mac OS X.
Yes,
I wish Apple wouldn't use the Roman numerals because it confuses me too.
Yes.
And I kind of like the sound of Mac OS X. It sounds better than Mac OS X.
Apple says we should call it 10. Hey, listen, Guy, isn't that on the internet where how to build? It looks like a shuttle PC, how to make a Mac from a...
Yep.
It's all over the place. There are people out there right now that are installing OS X on almost any x86 computer that's being made, even stuff with AMD.
I did it myself this week. I installed it on my MSI Wind machine.
That wasn't actually you. That was your evil twin brother.
No, it was me.
Okay.
It was me.
Don't worry, Guy. He's not covered under the Digital Millennium Act, so he can do it just fine and dandy.
Oh, that's true.
Okay.
You're not in the land of the free and the brave. Sorry.
He's under the queen.
Absolutely.
Well, let's not even go there,
David.
It was very easy. Excuse me.
Take a drink.
I followed some... Yeah, I'm gonna have to.
It's okay. You don't have to cry.
No. Yeah, you've upset me now. I've got a tear in my eye because you started talking about the Queen.
Yeah. God save the Queen.
No, I mean all the work had already been done for me. I just followed a set of instructions that told me the sort of piece of software I needed to run. The hardest part really was actually putting a different wireless card in the laptop because the one that ships with it is not supporting OS X. There's no drivers for it. But that was changing the wireless card in the laptop nowadays is just like changing a piece of memory. It's just swapping a circuit board over.
Yeah, sure.
So having done that, it took me about 2 hours, and it wasn't really much more difficult than installing OS X on a ordinary Mac.
It's the MSI Wind,
which is one of these cheapo ultra portable machines. It costs about $550, and it has a Intel Atom 1.6 gigahertz processor in the low power processor, and a hard drive and a gig of RAM and a 10-inch 1024x600 screen. It's a really nice light machine. It only weighs about 2.5 pounds, it's really sort of, in fact, I did comment on this in my Fenestration article that's coming out in a few days,
Monday.
But Monday, there you go. I said, you know, this is the sort of machine that if Apple actually resold it, bought it off MSI and put a fancy aluminium case on it and resold it with official OS X support, they could charge double what MSI charges and people would very happily buy it. And it would outsell the MacBook Air probably 10 to 1.
Because really, how's the performance?
Performance is pretty good. Under OS X, it's really, really quite snappy. I mean, if you do a lot of things on it, it starts slow down because the processor is only a single core. But, you know, it's the latest Intel processor, so it's got all the extensions you want on it, and it's low power but fairly good performance. And for just general browsing the web and, you know, running a bit of video, YouTube, that sort of thing, and doing office documents, it's perfectly fine. Runs VMware Fusion, so I've got Windows running on there as well. I mean, it's powerful enough to do that. So it really is the business. And as I say, you know, it was you have to install a couple of extra drivers and copy a couple of KEX files around the system just to make sure you get the full support you want. But pretty much everything except the 3.5mm audio jacks works on it straight out of the box. So I'm very pleased with it, and it was pretty easy to do. So it is possible to do this, and you know, if the real geek guys can do the work for you and actually figure out what needs to be hacked to make things working, then as an end user, it's fairly easy to follow the instructions and do it yourself.
Yeah, but you know, I heard everything you just said, and I want to interject here. It's not easy for the consumer because you are not a consumer. You're one of the 0.001% of that top of the consumer nerd. You're way ahead of most consumers. So I understand it was easy, but we're talking to a different crowd still. I think
I wouldn't recommend most people do this. I right. Absolutely 100% agree with you. It is a geek thing to do.
Totally.
And you know, I like, you know, to be honest with you, the principal reason I did it is because last year when I was sat in the press room at Macworld Expo with an ePC running Windows, some of the disgusted looks I got from you guys around the table were enough to put me off. So,
I would say, though, that probably of the demographic that listens to this particular podcast, 75% of them could do it just fine.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Sam. It's not the sort of thing that somebody who's new to computers or new to Macs will probably want to undertake, because if you just get one thing wrong, you can get yourself into a situation where effectively you've got to start the whole thing again. But for somebody with a modicum of knowledge, and if you've got the right instructions and you've got the right bits of software off the torrent sites and what have you, it's fairly easy to do if you want to do that sort of thing. But the point I made in my article is that to me this sort of, there's been a lot of debate in the last few days about some of the things Apple made in their comments they made in their recent earnings call about new products coming and that sort of thing, and people are starting to speculate what that might be. And to me, this indicates one possible thing it could be. It could be a very small Mac. I think that a lot of people have very fond memories about the 12-inch PowerBook, you know, miss the fact that there's no 12-inch machine currently in the lineup. So I'm wondering whether there's a possibility that Apple might look at this Atom platform and say, let's build a low cost portable Mac out of it, maybe a 10-inch or 12-inch machine.
That's a segue that I wanted to talk about, which is HP has a really nice, I don't know if they call it ultra-mobile UMPC, but it's basically the size of the EPC, correct?
Yeah, I had one of those, the Mini Note. In fact, I sold it to buy the Wind.
Okay, so you had the HP version, right?
Yeah, I did. And so a lot of people actually looking at it thought it was a Mac because it had an aluminium chassis and very small footprint, but it was a nice machine. Not as functional as the Wind because it had a pretty anemic processor in it. But it did kind of have that kind of Apple finish to it because it was engineered by the HP guys who used to do the old compact laptops.
Right.
And it was kind of like a skunkworks project within HP before it was officially launched.
Well, I would just like that size of a Mac, 2 gigahertz, that, you know, you could put 4 gigs of memory. I have a Mac, a PowerBook 12-inch, and it's fantastic because the size, it's fully functional. And Apple could do it with their eyes closed.
So why aren't they yet, you think?
I don't know. And the Mac, the Air is beautiful, but it's expensive. I mean, it's just an expensive product. So I would just wish, and now there's the rumor floating about the tablet. I don't know if that's all BS or not. It's to me.
I don't see a market for a tablet. I keep hearing about it. And yeah, with the iPhone platform out there now, it's definitely doable. I think all the pieces are there for Apple to do something like this. I just don't see, with the iPhone, I don't see why a tablet is needed or even wanted by the vast majority of people out there.
I agree, because let's face it, if it was a larger iPhone, you know, say a 7-inch iPhone,
yeah,
running the iPhone OS, then people would say, oh, you know, it doesn't have copy and paste, it doesn't have a proper keyboard, it's not functional enough, it only runs these Mickey Mouse apps, these little apps for the iPhone, it doesn't run proper apps. And if they actually put a full version of OS 10 on it, then people would go, oh, it's too complicated, it doesn't have a proper keyboard, you know, it's too difficult to use because it doesn't have a mouse and all this sort of thing. Why didn't they make it like the iPhone? So it would be a product caught between a rock and a hard place, and I don't think it would sell.
Well, I agree with everything you just said, though. I think if any company can make something like that work, it would definitely be Apple. Don't you agree, Guy Searle?
Yeah, I would agree. But we looked at the mod book, you know, to take it to the nth degree. And, you know, I think after seeing it actually work at Macworld, we were both kind of like...
2007.
Yeah, I mean, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
We both kind of looked at it and said, well, yeah, you know, that's kind of cool, but why?
Yeah, why would I need that? Or, you know, for the price, why?
Do you guys
just get it?
It's a MacBook with $1,000 tax.
Do you guys know anyone that has one or uses one?
No.
Never seen one out in the wild other than Macworld.
I get, you know, PR, I never heard. I went and spoke with them, never heard anything.
It's a product that has no home. I mean, I don't think anybody really wants it. I think everybody's kind of infatuated with the idea of a tablet Mac or the mod book, but I really don't see a market anywhere for it. Because if there was a market, I think that it's not like a tablet. Well, it's not like a tablet PC is a new concept. Every time I go to the doctor, all the nurses are using tablet PCs.
Yeah,
but that's where they're used. They're not used in the real world by anybody.
I've never seen one outside of the medical or other professions.
And I totally understand why they're handy in those situations, but. Other than that, I can't imagine that I would ever need one, David.
Well, I think we had the guy from Otherworld Computing on, and he said they were selling well, and I'm sure they probably are, but only to a very small market. And I think, you know, there's probably, I don't know, probably a couple of thousand people around the world who might possibly be interested in buying one, and probably only 50% of those would actually go to buy one. And I would imagine that there are some graphics designers and artists who travel a lot and would like to have something that works with a pen so they can work on stuff while they're on the plane or they're in a hotel room and not have to have a full tablet with them. But I think it's a niche, and it's certainly not mass market. And Microsoft's been plugging away with the tablets for years. And I had a tablet Windows PC a couple of years ago, and it was fine, and it was nice to take notes using a pen on it in a meeting. But the problem with a laptop-sized tablet like that is you have a battery life of about 3 hours in the thing. And if you're using it with a pen to take notes, that's just not good enough.
Four-hour
meeting, you're on a full day's meeting, you're on a training course when you want to be taking notes a lot of the time, you have to start plugging the thing in. And at that point, you kind of think, well, what's the point? Because pen and paper doesn't need a battery.
Well, if anybody out there is super interested in a tablet Mac, you can buy one right now from our sponsor, Otherworld Computing. Just go up to their website and you'll see a great big ad for the ModBook, Axiotron ModBook. They go for either $2,279 for the 2.1 gigahertz Core 2 Duo, or $2,479 for the 2.4 Core 2 Duo.
Yeah, well, the faster one also has twice the memory at 2 gigabytes.
Yeah, two gigabytes.
And it also has a larger hard drive.
A super drive.
It's a 160 drive over the 120 of the less expensive one.
But it
has a super drive.
There's no keyboard, right?
No, everything is done with it. It's basically got a Wacom tablet modded right on top of the iBook,
or
the MacBook. Yeah,
but you can easily hook up a keyboard to it if
it's
you want
it.
It's got USB, USB ports.
But here's the thing: if you're going to set this thing with a keyboard, how are you? What are you going to prop it up against something to type on? I mean, at that point, why not just spend half the money and get a MacBook?
Regular laptop? Yeah.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you could get one of those 800 megahertz G3 laptops that they also have at MacSales.com that we were talking about a couple weeks ago.
Speaking of Windows, that was a horrible segue, I know. you the last story that you provided this week, Guy, in your podcast topics is very, very interesting, and it has nothing to do with Mac other than
He talks about Apple. There was a story, and I don't have the link here. There was a story that was released about a inner office memo from Steve Ballmer saying that the company isn't as focused on Windows as they should, and you know. He's basically trying to counter some of the perceived bad blood that Vista has created since its release.
Well, let me read this. It says, an inner office memo. Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer admits that the company has not been focused as they should on Windows. Duh. In what has to be considered a remarkable statement, Mr. Ballmer claims that while various Windows platforms run on an astounding amount of hardware, Apple's idea of tightly focused OS and the hardware has led to much of their success. Microsoft plans to work closer with vendors to prevent some of the problems associated with Windows Vista and to repair the brand partly with a new advertising campaign. Ooh, yeah, we're just going to advertise it more. Even if it doesn't work as well as we would hope, we're just going to advertise the crap out of it. That'll sell.
Well, you know, we're a Mac site. We talk about Macs. We all prefer Macs. But I don't wish Microsoft or Windows harm. I use Windows every single day, and I don't have any problems with it. It does exactly what I expect of it.
The better Microsoft Windows is, as far as usability and blah, 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 the better Mac OS X will be. Because Apple will not give up that lead in usability and everything else that the Mac OS X leads Windows in.
No. And I think this really shows a lack of understanding of the differences between Microsoft and Apple. Microsoft really should not care. They just should not, they should not even consider it to be a problem.
Who should?
You know, Microsoft should.
Absolutely they should.
You know, I disagree. I think part of the problem they have is that they still see themselves as in competition with Apple. And in fact, Apple and Microsoft are in completely different markets. Yeah, Microsoft are not really nowadays. They're not about the consumer. They're bundling an operating system that's going onto the PCs, but really where they're making their money is in businesses. And businesses have a very different focus. They want stability. They're not even really so much bothered about usability, whereas Apple is very much about usability and the end user computing experience.
Yeah.
Now, Vista is actually, you know, I've used Vista, and it's...
It's not bad. It's not as bad as a lot of people give it.
No,
you know,
exactly.
Crap about.
It's got a lot of it's you know, suffers from that usual Microsoft problem that when it was first launched, the launch was a bit botched. The driver support wasn't there a lot. The manufacturers let them down in terms of bringing driver support, and there was a lot of people who had some bad experiences, particularly on PCs that were loaded with crapware. Yeah. Or PCs that were infected with malware, and they tried to upgrade to Vista, and it didn't really work. And there are a couple of seriously broken things in Vista that still haven't been fixed. The speed with which it copies files from one machine to another is completely screwed up in Vista, and they still haven't had that properly. So, but having actually, it's okay, but it suffers from the usual Microsoft problem when you come to the usability, which is that you rather than get down to actually do something with it, it offers you 15 different ways of doing the same thing, and none of them are actually consistent between different parts of the applications and the operating system environment, which means it's extremely confusing. And that is really where Microsoft XP's had this, Windows 2000's had this, all the way through. It's because architecturally, the way they come up with the way they interact with the operating system is all about wizards and fancy graphics and things that they think are clever, and in fact, everybody else thinks are stupid.
Well, don't you think then that you just disproved your point, David, and that maybe Microsoft should be looking at Apple and what they're doing correctly and incorporate some of those core principles into Windows, thus they would make a much better operating system.
I think that approach is cultural, and I don't think Microsoft has the culture to actually be able to deliver those sort of things. And all they do, and Vista is a prime example of this, Vista really is a poor copy of some of the things in OS X.
Yep.
In terms of, you know, it tries to offer that very slick user experience, but it fails just because architecturally and the way the layers of the GUI are built up just don't work, and you end up with this mishmash of ideas and concepts. And it's because I think actually Microsoft delivers a lot of its software functionality by committee, by team. And I don't think Apple does that. I think Apple, they have teams, but they're very focused. They understand what they want to do, and they work things through again and again and again. And they don't always get it right. I mean, there are some inconsistencies in OS X today, and sometimes those things can be quite frustrating. But the point is that I think overall they hit the mark more times than they miss, whereas with Microsoft it's completely the other way around.
Sam, do you think that a lot of Microsoft's problems, at least with their OS updates and feature releases of their OS, is that they try to be compatible with every freaking computer out there rather than saying, here's the cutoff point, you have to have a minimum of this system or it's not going to work, just like Apple does?
You know, guys, this is a loaded question.
That's why we asked it.
Well, no, I mean, this is not a 5-10 minute discussion. This is,
no,
David is right about culture. Absolutely, it's part of it is culture. But look, they take from each other. Apple has taken some of the things from Windows. Windows has taken, well, they in my opinion, they took the whole damn UI from Apple OS and, you know, Vistaized it and, you know, has made
it. You can go farther back than that. I mean,
way more.
Windows wouldn't have existed had it not been
right.
for the Mac
OS. Absolutely. Oh, but, yeah, Mac OS. You know, that's then. The biggest issue, you've got a company, Microsoft, that has licensed its operating system to scads of vendors that are clones, PC people all over the world that make different types of hardware. And it's everything to motherboards to, you know, everything.
DVD drives.
Everything. Multimedia boards back in the early 90s. Anyway, Apple makes everything from the operating system to the hardware. Everything is integrated properly. All the software works properly with its hardware components. Why? Because the left hand truly does shake with the right. And under file, everything, file, edit, copy, all those things work properly across the board with all applications. On Windows, they don't. And now I don't know if that's still true with Vista, but I suspect there's still those inaccuracies and inconsistencies because you've got a company that's primary goal is to license the OS, and of course its other biggest cash cow is Office. So that's the biggest diversity there. Apple makes everything, its hardware, its software, and it works seamlessly, and hence the experience is on the money, and their designs are, you know, look at what HP just came out with and Dell. Do you see HP's new, I call it the iMac clone? Did you see that?
Yeah. It's been out for a little while.
Well, this is their second iteration. Their first one was when Vista launched a year and a half ago, and it didn't even work properly because the webcam, the built-in webcam, wouldn't support Vista. So it was crazy. It was a touch screen, 19-inch. Now they have a 22-inch. And it looks beautiful. Now, the question is, will it work? So
yes, if you install Mac OS X on it.
Uh-huh.
Well, I saw one of those at a Best Buy recently, and it, you know, one of the guys there was demonstrating it for a potential buyer. And I have to be honest, it was pretty slick.
It's beautiful.
It's a nice-looking machine. It's just it's running a crap OS.
Well, does it really work? And I already got a video from a friend who sent a – you know, he basically took a video, kind of like a photo. What is it called? The photo app on the Mac. I forgot the name.
Screen Capture X.
iPhoto?
No, the photo.
iPhoto?
No. The photo.
Photo booth.
Photo booth. Yeah. So they have their own version of photo booth for Vista, and you know, it has little animations in the background. And he took a video of him and his son, and it looked really nice. It's all touch screen, so basically you can use the screen with your finger. The real question is, does it really work? Because a lot of these machines look really cool
when you first buy them.
When you first buy them, and all of a sudden there's these just gaping snags with the software.
Let's look at what Ballmer said is their solution to this problem is to deliver an experience more like the Apple experience by focusing and integrating more closely with the hardware vendors.
Which is a good idea.
Well, yeah. But the problem is that realistic in today's Windows market?
I think it is if Microsoft is serious about it, because they have the clout to go to the vendors and say, this is the compliance list. You're going to, if you want Windows Vista on your machines out the door from the warehouse to the customer, these are the things that you're going to have to comply with. And if you don't, we will pull your licensing vendor.
You're not going to get Windows. I can't see that happening. I think culturally, again, the market, if you look at the Windows PC market, it's a race to the bottom. You know, you've got a whole load of Chinese and Taiwanese vendors who literally build things down to the cheapest price possible. And the last thing they write is the driver and the instructions for the thing. And they write it once and then they never look at it again. And the drivers are normally crappy. And what happens is if you buy a product like that and then install on your Windows machine, it causes you problems. The other problem as well is that, you know, Windows PCs are sold with all this crud accumulating on them, and then as soon as they're connected to the internet, they start collecting more crud because there's all this spyware and malware and that sort of thing that ends up infecting the machines, and all of that.
Which isn't that big of a problem, though, with Vista.
But they've done a better job.
It's not nearly as bad as it was in the early right. years of XP.
Right.
Right.
They've done a better job, and you guys, I should send you the link to the Geek Dinner that I did with Robert Scoble, Harry McCracken, who just left PC World as
Good
their
for
editor.
Him, by the way.
He just started Technologizer. Anyway, and Jeremy Toman and, I'm thinking there's one other person, and Fred Davis. I don't know if you know who Fred Davis is. He was one of the original people at Wired. He was he was the editor of A+ Magazine, Mac User. We did a dinner, and it was about Mac OS X versus PC. And all the things that you guys are talking about, we had a complete, like, no, this sucks. No, this is better. PCs suck. Of course, I was on the Mac fence, and lobbing baseballs over to their side or mud balls, but it really is intriguing because this is deja vu. There's some good things about PCs, meaning they're cheap, right? Yeah. They're inexpensive. They are, and you could buy clones really cheap. You just can. You can buy them for what, $299 a Dell or something like that. That's
one. You go to Walmart and pick up a $199 special that has Linux on it, for God's sake.
Yeah, I'm not bringing Linux into this yet, but I'm talking about Windows. Soon, Windows XP is gone anyway. I guess the word came down. It's over, right? Real soon. So, yeah. So Vista Box for $299 from a major brand. The question, you know, that I really have is usability and. How simple is it? What can you do, like what we can do with iLife and the integration? And it comes down to they don't have that. They just don't. Go try to create go use Movie Maker on a PC. Go try it. And now try iMovie. Huh?
Thank you, but no.
I try it. It's just horrible. And plus, iLife has everything you need. It's completely integrated. And that sums it up. When you look at those two things between the PC experience and the Mac experience, but people are sucked into the cheap. Oh, I can get it for cheap. Okay, what can you do with it? And they're limited.
That's always been the way that PC. The difference between PC users and Mac users. PC users generally are looking for the cheapest solution. I've got $700 on my credit card. I can't go over that. Thus, boom, it completely rules out the Mac OS. I'll get with the cheap PC. I know it's going to be cheap. I know I'm going to have problems, but I'm going to live with it because it's within my budget.
Yep. And and what I try to tell people now is that you can buy your Mac and run, if you need to have a specific PC app, and there's some that don't run on Mac, like financial, real estate, something bizarre or whatever, accounting, there's a great one. There's a lot of accounting apps, or Autodesk.
CAD.
You know, that AutoCAD. There you go. Autodesk, AutoCAD. You need a PC, but guess what? I can run it on a Mac really well, and I can have the best operating system in the world, the best user experience, hit a button, and now I'm into the Vista mode and run it just as well. So I try to explain that to people. Guys,
I have a way to explain it to them for you, Sam.
What?
That works every time for me now. What you tell them is, say, this is what you say. You say, well, you know, if you buy a Macintosh computer, you can run any piece of software in the world that runs for Linux, the Mac, or any flavor of Windows. You can run any program on a Macintosh.
Right.
That usually sells people. They're like, really? And you go, yep. So in other words, you do all your business stuff on the Windows side, but when you want to browse the internet, check your email, watch video, stuff like that, and you want to be completely secure, no viruses, no malware, none of that crap, no spyware, you just use it on the Mac and everything's going to be just great. It's going to work great. You don't have to worry about antivirus this or antivirus that. You simply use the Mac for most of your stuff. But if you need to use your CAD program, if you need to use the dental program for your office, then you could fire that up and it will run just fine. And there's multiple solutions to run Windows on your Mac. You can either run it while the Mac is running, or you can reboot the machine and it will boot up as a Windows PC. And people are like, wow, I didn't know it could do all that.
Right.
I think that's the biggest problem that Apple's facing right now in their advertising, is they're not advertising that. Not really.
Right.
I mean, if they just had a demonstration, a 30-second demonstration of somebody saying, you know, they're on their Mac and they're messing with iMovie or iPhoto, and someone says, hey, I need that report. You show them, click a button, and boom, Windows pops up, and they start working, and boom, they click back to the Mac, and Mac OS, the only computer that can run Windows and every OS.
That's the next, possibly the next ad campaign, but that completely defeats the Mac PC campaign with the, you know, the two dudes.
I don't think so. I think it shows that, you know, it really, you have to run Windows software occasionally. You have to.
Well, and they've acknowledged that with Boot Camp.
Yeah.
Sure.
And well, and they've also acknowledged it in one of those ad campaigns where the Mac guy says, well, I can run all the Office programs too.
Yeah, but I think he was talking about MS Office for the Mac, not so much running MS Office for Windows.
Yeah.
True. But I think Apple would go a long way to winning even more customers over if they simply showed Windows starting up on a Mac while the Mac was running, using VM Fusion or what have you. I think a lot of people go, holy crap, I didn't know it could do that.
Well, a lot of people still don't realize, oh, you can run Office on a Mac. I mean, there are people out there that still say that. So,
well, you really can't.
Yeah, the new version's pretty bad.
It is pretty bad.
Yeah, I've got the home use program version. I still can't get it to load. I keep getting this weird activation error, and I just haven't had time to call MS yet about it.
I've given up on it now. I run the old version, run 2004, or I run it under Windows. 2008.
I keep getting emails from the Microsoft PR people asking when I'm going to get around to writing my articles on Office 2008 for the Mac, and I keep telling them.
And it's fixed.
You know, when you guys finally release a version that works correctly, I will write about it. Well, we just had a big update.
Have you guys noticed that my Word, when I open it and quit it, it won't quit. It keeps opening up again when I quit it.
Nice, nice.
It's the most bizarre thing. It's got an evil twin inside of it. It's hilarious.
Well, the thing is, last time I installed Office 2008, and then I went to get the service pack that's meant to fix all the problems. I downloaded the service pack. It's 428 megabytes, the service pack.
Yeah.
That's how much code they had to fix. And it still doesn't work right. It's insane.
And it still doesn't, absolutely. Yep.
Well, let's be fair now. What about the last OS X update? I mean, hell, that was over 500 megabytes if you got the combo version.
Yeah, but it fixed a whole bunch of problems. At least it worked.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, and the difference there, though, and you look at the next version of the Mac OS X that's coming out, Apple is bragging that there's no new features.
Yeah.
And that says something.
Yeah, it's mostly just to keep it, I guess, all Intel.
Well, it's all going to be under the hood improvements to the architecture.
Do you think they're going to charge for it?
Probably not. I can't imagine that anybody's going to want to pay for no new functionality. Or at least no new features. I'm sure there might be some new functionality, but it's nothing that's going to sell anybody on an operating system. I think Apple's going to, if they do sell it, it's going to be very, very cheap. If you want the shrink wrapped box with it, they'll probably sell it to you for $30. But I think it's probably going to be a free download if you want to download. It's probably going to be a hefty one, granted. But I don't think Apple's going to try to make money off of it, if that's what you mean.
10.6 with 5 new features.
Will it even be 10.6?
Yeah. That's what they're saying. Otherwise, it's just a service pack.
I will buy it if it makes my machine more stable, but to be quite honest, my machine's not very unstable as it is. Is yours, Sam?
It's so rock solid. I have the original MacBook Pro. Don't you as well, Tim?
Yes, I got the 2.0 gigahertz.
Same one. One, and it's Core Duo. It's not even Core 2 Duo. 2 gigahertz RAM, and it's absolutely perfect. I did update the hard drive.
It's only 1.5 gigahertz RAM, Sam. That's as much as that machine will take.
No. Hold on a second.
Pretty sure.
No, then I'm reading the about this Mac wrong.
I thought that only took 2. Oh, two maybe gig. It is. It only takes 2 gigs.
2 that's is right. The maximum. 2 is the maximum. Right. I have 2 gigahertz. Intel Core Duo, and and it's absolutely rock solid. The only thing I did was I put a 200 gig drive inside. I removed the original drive, which was like...
Well, see, my laptop, that machine for me, Sam, is kind of my in the kitchen.
Right.
When I'm sitting in the kitchen, I use it when I'm in there, or anytime I go somewhere. So I keep the drive very, very clean. I've still got the original 80 gig hard drive in it. And it's only like a quarter of the way full right now.
Great machine.
But, you know, here's the thing, and here's the problem for Apple. I have absolutely no desire or need to upgrade that machine because it's plenty fast for everything that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And it just works. It's a good, good machine. I don't see, unless it actually breaks on me, you know, it slides off my lap and the hinge breaks.
Yeah, you've just heard their last financial results. They have no problem selling machines.
Yeah, I know.
They are not relying on the upgrade.
They made a net profit of $1.07 billion,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Apple's doing pretty
well. What's their market share, guys? Is it 10% now?
It depends on who you listen to, what numbers you trust, and
globally,
what region of the world.
Globally,
they're only like 3%. 10?
Yeah, no. 3 to 5%, depending on whose numbers you believe. Here in the U.S., I've heard numbers anywhere from 7 to 10%.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, market share is immaterial, really. In fact, I think it's a good thing that it's not too large, because just look at some of the scaling problems they've had with the large number of iPhone 3Gs in the launch. And
look at 2 weeks ago
exactly.
And see what Apple could do on it. But then again, to be quite fair, though, if they started gaining massive market share, I don't think they really have to scale other than building new machines. Their architecture is already all there, isn't it?
Well, let me ask you guys something. At what point do you think Apple might consider getting not so much out of the computer business, but stop selling Macs?
Never.
No.
Never.
Never.
Never. They make way too much money on it, and it's the advances in the Mac OS X that allows them to do something like the iPhone, the upcoming iPods, and whatever the next consumer device Apple comes out with, whether it's what Robert Hazelrig is... sent me a message about, hoping that it's an Apple TV, not the little box, but an actual TV with a Mac OS built in.
Right.
Okay.
Or anything like that. It's that architecture allowing them to do that.
Well, then let me ask you this. How high do you think their market share can go with their current business model?
I would say probably 15.
And you think that would be about where it would level out?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what
you realize
then?
At 15% market share, Apple's going to be bringing in, at least with their current numbers, probably close to, $2 billion? $3 billion per quarter?
Oh, probably more than that.
More. They're 20 billion, aren't they 20 billion run rate for sales right now?
Yeah.
Well, for sales. We're talking about profit.
A profit.
I think they can go higher even than 15% as long as it's incremental and it's not a big jump. I think the big jumps is what's going to kill you.
I don't think it'll ever go big jump. I don't think any company is at the point, other than, you know, like a web startup company, like a Twitter, they can go, you know, 20,000 per day and well, no, actually Twitter can't scale that way either, can they?
They haven't been able to yet.
Did you want to talk about that real quick, Sam? Before we wrap the show up, what happened with Twitter?
You know, I rely, you know, I don't know about you guys, but we all are on Twitter, and I think we all follow one another, and I follow a number of different pundits, and I use it as a one-to-many kind of broadcast, and over the last few weeks, actually longer than a few weeks, Twitter has gone through this roller coaster of outages, and as of, like, last night, I guess it went down and basically took a number of followers out of each person's Twitter feed.
It didn't take them out. What happened was they crashed the entire server, and they had to rebuild from a 12-hour-old backup. So anything that happened after that 12 hours is gone, including anybody who joined your feed or what have you. So it's not like they deleted those. They just didn't have them anymore because they had to go with a backup that was 12 hours old, which is just insane.
I know. So, I don't know what they're going to do, but they better do something quickly to make sure that they're able to scale this because a lot of people use it. A lot of people love it. They've got Twitterific, which is a client on the Mac. I don't know if they make it on the PC, but it's on the Mac. They have it on the iPhone. But there's another really cool service called FriendFeed, and that is what I've been using as well, and it's fantastic. And you subscribe to it or your other friends' feeds, and it will post what you've done on other services immediately. They're the guys, two guys from I believe from Google started this service. So if you've got a friend feed, you'll see all the different friends up there, and you can subscribe. And it's a great service, and it's never had an outage problem. So
yeah, but they're not as large as Twitter either.
They're not. So we'll see when they get to, I think, 2 million. I think, I don't know how many Twitter people are on it. I heard about 2 million.
Well, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm twitter.com/mymac. And if you want to follow me on Friend Feed, I'm friendfeed.com/mymac.
Wait, now how are we supposed to remember that?
I know, it's so difficult, my man. Well, we're going to wrap up the show because we're getting a little bit long in the tooth. We're almost at an hour and 20 minutes, and we didn't have a lot to talk about when we started the show. Imagine that. We will be back next week. I've got an invite to somebody out there to come on the show. Hopefully they'll agree and they'll come on really, really soon. If not, well, then we don't have a guest for next week.
And we'll just spend another hour.
I'll find a guest.
You'll find a guest. Yes. Well, you're going to be at the podcast or the App Store.
iPhone Developer Camp.
Yeah, I knew it was something like that.
Oh, man, I'm going to be camping out with the nerds.
While you're there, you know, you need to grab some of these developers, get them on the show while we're recording.
WWDC. I'm going to try to do, guys, you're going to love this. I'm going to try to get, like, 4 to 6 dudes, because they're obviously guys, with their iPhones playing Band.
Nothing sexist about that.
Have you seen the application called Band? It's from Mookow Music. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, I've got it.
Okay. I want to do a live jam session on our iPhones.
That's kind of scary.
Using Band, we plug them into the speakers and then record it and have like one dude doing the drums, the other doing the guitar and rhythm. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be very nerdish.
I'm telling you, well, I'll get out there on the mic.
You guys, obviously, I got a couple emails about this. Where's Lee? I don't know what's going on with Lee Givens, whether he's going to be back on the show anytime soon or not. He's really extremely busy at work. And I kind of wanted to get somebody else occasionally on the show for, you know, talking about iPhone applications or what it's like to be a developer and that sort of thing, because I thought Lee really brought that aspect of what he does for a living to the show, and I really like that, and I know a lot of our listeners were enjoying that as well.
Plus, he's really smart as well.
And he's very intelligent. But we talked to someone last week that was also very intelligent, and his name was Bill Dunney, And I asked him if he'd be interested in coming back on the show occasionally, and he said, absolutely. So we're going to have Bill back on the show here real soon. I think he will bring a lot of what Lee was bringing, but from more of a independent developer type of point of view. And I think that's going to be important moving forward into the future, because I think a lot of companies his size are really where the future is. And I think we need to hear from people like that going forward. Don't you guys agree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt.
That and, yes. and I want to bring some females into this. That's what we need.
Who does?
Ladies.
That's right.
Female speaking developers.
Speaking of band.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
That's your iPhone?
Yeah, that's my iPhone.
All right, so we're going to do a band contest as well. Yeah, but that's one of their key.
Yeah, but that's because I can't play anything.
Well, you know what it needs, Tim, right?
Cowbell.
That's right.
Cowbell.
Wait, how do you play Mary Had a Little Lamb? Do anybody know?
Yeah.
No.
Press the keys in the right order.
Oh, God. All right.
Oh, Dave has got the solution. Can we please stop this?
All right. All right, guys. Have a great one.
I think that's going to be the show this week. Sam Levin, thanks for coming on and spending the whole time with us.
It was a pleasure. Because,
you know, when Sam's here, come on.
I got to have more cowbell.
So we're out of here. We'll see you guys next week.
See you next week.
Bye. Yeah.
I can do this all day.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.